That was Fatback Ben, Fatbacking.
Oh, okay.
I never knew Weldon did. All right, so people, welcome to Tell Me Your Story. And for the next month, we're going to be talking all digging for Weldon Irvine. All right, we've showcased a lot of filmmakers and writers, and now it is our time to shine. So, and Weldon's time to shine, right? So yeah, right into it. I didn't know that Weldon wrote a song or songs for Fatback Band. I never knew this. You knew this?
No, I didn't.
I know that.
Yeah.
I'm just going through like all his credits. So I'm just doing like a marathon of his, like, looking for his credits, and I found this. And that song is a very important song in hip hop. Very, very important song in hip hop. So I hope you know where I'm going with that. So I listened to it. There's no words. I mean, he wrote the actual fucking music, right? And so I ended up like getting a whole lot of records that aren't Weldon records, uh-huh. But the records that Weldon wrote, and it's gonna be dope. It's gonna be dope. So
what was the one I sent you that one time I saw online? It was a 45 with the pink label.
I don't know.
Oh, okay, whatever.
You gotta say, yeah, people are there. So we're live too. So we're gonna say no. Say hi.
Say live. What?
Say hello.
Hello.
How long you sent me? What did I say about
you? You didn't know about it at the time.
Oh.
And it was like a It was a YouTube video with a 45 that had a pink label, and it was another group.
Stand Up and Be Counted, the Ghetto Kitty joint.
Yeah, the Ghetto Kitty.
Yo, you know what? I forgot about that, and I relearned that the other day, and I didn't know that. I knew that before. Sorry about that. It takes twice for me to think. I didn't know that, and I like that song.
Yeah.
That was like an actual important song.
Right.
He wrote that shit.
Yeah.
So I'm just doing, all right, y'all, sorry. We have like a jamboree going on outside next door. Of folk music or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still good to be working on this project for so long, and I'm still excited to find out new things about the guy. That's super dope.
I was wondering, do you notice something different in these kind of collaborative records that he did, these one-offs or whatever they were for other groups? Like, if he was writing different than from his own stuff, or like he was writing for them, or do you feel like they're still just welding records? Like,
I don't feel like they're welding records at all.
Yeah.
I feel like he was able to, I think, transmogrify is a word that Clyde Bullard.
Yeah. It's a funky word.
Right? Yeah. No, man. Like, the Fatback Band shit blew my mind. So I hit up Bill Curtis at the Fatback Band. I act like I have his number on my phone, right? I hit up Bill Curtis at the Fatback Band. He's like, yeah, a good friend of mine, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, so when Weldon said, you know, he wrote 500 songs, all right, you know what I'm saying? Like, all right, Weldon, you know what I'm saying? But I'm looking like, oh, shit, he may have actually written... And he said, like, maybe about a couple hundred did actually come out. Mm-hmm. That may be true. Right. I mean, you know, you just never know if it's true. But it sounded like, and these are legitimate records. And here's the thing. You go to, say, online, the Fatback Band's album, People Music, right? 73. You go online, and certain sites won't list him in the credits. You go to the single, he's in the credits. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yo, you can totally miss this dude if you're not digging, you know, for him.
Right.
And then the host of other composers and all of that.
But the way he was, he seemed to always be like, or not always, but he seemed pretty meticulous with his records and like documenting aspects of his life. And it's like, do you think there might be something out there where he had a list of his writing credits or you know, some type of documentation of it?
That's a good thing. I never thought about that at all.
Yeah.
You know what?
It doesn't seem like the thing he wouldn't care about. Like, you know, it seems like the thing he would make a note of somewhere.
I know there has to be a list of all the things he published. I know that much.
Right.
The things he worked on.
Right. They might have just been work for hire or like just some money. And...
Yeah, definitely, because there weren't Nodlu records at all.
Right.
Just that he was brought in to compose and arrange. But that one he wrote, but it still wasn't Nodlu, which was pretty interesting. I saw actually one credit said written by and another one said composed by. It wasn't written by at all. Mm-hmm. So I hate to say, I think I would have had touch a list. I got to ask. I got to ask around if there was a list. Mm-hmm. But I mean, also 73, I mean, you know, you're in the middle of it. And, you know, I'm wondering if he even thought about that. Because I know we only have archive of him in 77, something like that, that Collis Davis shot. But I don't know what his demeanor and personality was 4 years prior. He may have thought it was never going to end. You know, he may have, you know, just been going day to day and not thinking about that.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
How special was it? Because, I mean, after he got, you know, dumped from RCA, then everything becomes very special, you know, and very important. But before that, you're still drop your first record. It's like, whatever, you know, I'm
right.
Just, you know, so.
Yeah, he seemed though, I don't know if you want to talk about the tapes you found.
Talk about
everything. Yeah, he's somebody who had posterity on his mind a lot. Like someone who thought what he did and what he spoke about was something that people later on would want to know.
Right.
Or, you know, like. I don't know if you want to tell people about these.
No, just talk.
Okay.
I'll stop you if you're saying too much.
So we found some tapes, some audio cassettes.
At G Clef's house.
At G Clef.
Clef, what up?
Who was a musician that played with Weldon.
Yes. Weldon's last disciple, as Weldon called him. Mm-hmm. And the EP, the executive producer of the film. The reason why we're all here.
Yeah.
Actually, the reason why we're all here. But yes, he found, we shot that too. We have him yeah, we have him finding the tapes because Weldon walked around with a boombox that, you know, for those who don't know, a boombox, you know, a handheld.
It was a thing that played music before. It was a little bigger than a phone.
Cassette tapes.
Yeah.
But it was the kind that you could record into, and everywhere you go, he records conversations, and he would make dubs of them. He would edit them and make dubs of them, and he'd pass them out to all his people. So, yes, he went to G Clef's house. He already told me he had these tapes, and then we just went and digging for them and found them. And it had, like, great stuff where I didn't need, like, filmmakers can relate, documentaries can relate. There were people who had interviews of Weldon that I was like, I need an interview. And now I got Weldon. I got Weldon things, tapes that we own.
Right.
Weldon talking, and it's like, whereas we originally were going to do a narrator, now we're going to have Weldon narrating. We have so much of Weldon talking.
Yeah, that was a real special moment, I think. Like, that gave me chills, just hearing his voice, because it is, you are hearing this voice from, you know, not to be too morbid, from the beyond.
Beyond.
I was going to say the grave, but the beyond is nicer.
The crypt.
And it was, it was interesting, too, because according to G Clef, he would record these things and give them to people, and it's like kind of like if somebody doesn't have like the same idea about your importance that you have, and you say, like, you give them a tape and say, hey, hold on to this, you know, a lot of people might have been like, yeah, whatever, man, like, and thrown it away,
sure,
or put it
on.
Yeah, there might be, so these things might be scattered all around, you know, Queens and
that's another
Long
film.
Island and
that's
everything.
That's a film right there.
Like, I mean, that is
Walden to be tape, Walden's tapes. We'll work on that.
Yeah.
But Hulu will love that.
Be a series.
Finding
8-episode series.
Finding Walden's tapes.
Yeah.
Like Al Capone's vault.
Yeah. It's glove. It's glove
definitely,
box.
We have him doing scat battles with G Clef. We have him performing at schools. Wait, do you have the tapes? That's in your bag.
I haven't. No. I just heard what we heard that day.
I'm sorry. You gotta ask me for things. I don't know what you want.
Yeah.
You want to hear this stuff?
Hell yeah.
She had like 10 sessions, just unpublished work, just like 10 sessions of him playing music. So it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. And you can tell that Clef was excited, and it's good when you do this stuff, you bring life into the interview subjects. And
oh, yeah.
Sometimes closer, sometimes, you know?
And from like a kind of purely selfish point, like, as a filmmaker, like making a film, you find something like that, and that's like, okay, now we really, like, this is really, like, this works for me too. Like, it's like,
keep talking, Mike, because I'm going to the laptop real quick.
Okay. So yeah. Anyways, we were just talking about this incident where we were in Long Island, right? Somewhere. Hempstead. No.
Where we talking about? Where I live? You talking about?
No, where G Clef lives. Oh yeah, you live.
Well, he didn't know. Why would you say where he lives? No, just let me know.
We were out of state, and we were doing this interview, and with G Clef, and he's got like a basement of recording equipment, records, a lot of jazz records, you know, it's just like typical lab, and these tapes, he was kind of talking about them, and then we just found them on a lower shelf, kind of like, ta-da. And so, it was a real dope discovery. As a filmmaker, doing a documentary on someone who's no longer alive, having them talk about themselves in their own words is, you know, it's priceless. Like, you can't, you know, that's, it just brings the counterpoint to everything that you're trying to say about this person. You know, it's like, now they have a say in it, and it's like, that's a big deal.
What blew your mind so far about what you learned about Weldon?
The most mind-blowing... Well, there was the one thing, but I don't know how if you want to go on.
Oh.
Maybe not.
This is about... Well, let's don't say any names, but just talk about that. Yeah, I think I know where you're going.
About... Ownership? Well, I don't really remember...
Ownership?
No.
Oh, then whatever you can say that.
Really?
Yeah, just say it.
About getting, like...
All 25 listeners don't...
About the possibility that he might have been doing something to get money, or is that...
Gambling?
No. All right, well.
No.
That's been discredited, or that's...
That's just speculation.
That's pure speculation.
But what fact, you know, did you find out that... We can talk about that though. Let's say this right. Weldon was very, very. I'm gonna say enthralled. I have a couple words in me. Enthralled.
Yeah.
With weapons, since a child.
Right.
And we have a picture of him, 7th birthday. He has a little toy gun. Only one of his friends. He's dressed up like a cowboy toy gun. So even to the 70s, he had guns and knives and throw knives and all that. And
right.
So
yeah.
There definitely was a side of him that was. Might have been on the as they call back in the day, the gully side,
right.
You know, of Walden Irving. You know,
yeah.
We have testimony that, he wasn't a person that was above necessarily striking another man.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is...
I mean, these are the things...
Is,
yeah, right. But you find... It's just... Interesting where you start with the documentary. I think you talked about this a little bit too, where you wanted Weldon to be a certain way, and now the more you learn, the less, you know, it's like, it can't be that way.
He's
like,
not that way.
Yeah, and he's not that way. And that's, I think that's important for, you know, if you're trying to truthfully examine anybody's life,
yeah.
You know, the good and the bad and what have you. But going back to your question, I think... More than just like one mind-blowing fact, I think the picture I have of him and what I'm learning about him is like what it means to live an artist's life and be an artist. Like the idea of artistry and especially being a musician that gets kind of floated and is in the general mainstream consciousness now. I think, you know, it has a lot to do with social media, has a lot to do with, you know, just videos and stuff like that. And this is before all that. And it's like, by all accounts, like he lived a pretty tough life. One where he had to live check to check, really hustle, really, you know, live by his wits and also his artistry and his creativity. And, but, totally lost my train of thought.
Go ahead.
But, crap.
Well,
this was going towards a lot.
We're on IG Live now.
Sorry, all these. Yeah,
we have Kyle Blackman, Donald Blackman's, the great Don Blackman's son is on the check-in. He's our first viewer. Shout out to Kyle. We're currently playing phone tag. Kyle, we're gonna get it together. But did you get your thought yet?
What the freak was I gonna say? Oh, okay, sorry. But he also was someone that seemed to have a mission and a purpose and this wider idea of his life and what he wanted his life to mean and how it would influence other people. You know, we talked about he played in schools for kids, he organized concerts for kids, he tried to mentor other musicians and stuff. Right. And
to that point, you know, a lot of the musicians, and I interview them, a lot of them were pretty good before they met Weldon. You know, and so I liken him onto like a Yoda, where he didn't really give anyone the Force, and he wasn't doing what Luke or Darth Vader can do, but Weldon, like Yoda, I'm going real deep into this one, but Weldon had, you know, the way to bring the things out of great talent.
Yeah.
You know, even if he wasn't technically great, you know, himself.
Right.
You know what I found online? In a Record World magazine in 1974, there was a four-page ad of the Cosmic Vortex album. Hmm. On it, it said, I had a cover.
You said full-page or four-page?
Four-page.
Oh, okay.
And it said, composer, writer, arranger, producer, and it all comes together, something like really good, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And that was like, you know, it was mind-blowing because, I think we're bleeding over here. It's mind-blowing because it's like it gives like a lot of context to who he was and how he was pushed by the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Weldon wasn't pushed as a great pianist, definitely not a vocalist. So just to see that RCA pushed him as composer, producer, writer, arranger,
right. Yeah.
That is so dope. And it kind of lets him off the hook of being more than that. And then when you, I have a... And recording of him speaking, and he's saying, he said, I'm a poet first, you know, composer, arranger, he made some with the producer, but he said a pianist and hip hop performer.
Uh-huh.
So even himself, he put pianist as last
out of
all his talents. Yeah. He said, I'm a poet.
Yeah.
And I guess a pretty good hustler because he went pretty far to just.
Yeah.
You know?
And I guess going back to what I was saying, it's just this. I really admire, I guess, this ambition to make one's life bigger and more important to you or to the world at large. But it's also, I can really, I guess, relate to the places where he fell short and the struggles that he encountered in his kind of mission, and how his life ends tragically. And it's, I can only, you know, we can only wonder and speculate how he felt about it at that point, you know, like what he had accomplished. Because to me, from the outside, he was a successful person, you know, like he did things, you know, like, but I think it's hard, you know, I don't know, when subjectively, when you're in your own life, if you can see it that way.
Well, when the money's not coming in, it's hard to feel successful. From what I've been able to tell so far, is Weldon didn't feel successful in the moment, but Weldon knew that his time would come, you know, possibly after death. That's why he was trying to push his to sell his masters or publishing. One of the tapes he had was little riffs.
Oh right, yeah.
And some of the songs that he thought that hip hoppers, that's not old as shit. That hippity boppers, but like, you know, that producers would like.
It would be funky and fresh.
Right, it'd be funky and fresh, right? And he would put these tapes out, put his number, and he was the kind of guy like, hey, I'm Weldon Levine, I did this, sample me, please. So yeah. He knew that
it was coming. Right?
No, not the vinyl, he made tapes.
Oh,
his
okay.
Calling card literally would be a tape with some of the hits that he thought that would be funky for hip hop.
Right.
And he put it with his P.O. box and his phone number. It's like, yo, I'm cool. I'm not like this jazz guy or that jazz guy. Sample me.
Right. Oh, okay.
He knew that hip hop was his lifeline. There's no way that he didn't know that. There's no way that he thought that he could bring himself back into jazz.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't happening for Weldon.
Yeah, and that's also something that's really interesting about him, and possibly the reason why we're here doing this is because of his later career transition into hip-hop and his acceptance of it, whereas a lot of other artists, a lot of people he mentored as well, probably, right, had a real, either a total dislike of hip-hop or, at best, ambivalent towards it and the creativity and artistry of hip-hop, you know, especially when it came to sampling. Especially game with the lyrics as well, you know. It was hard for guys of his generation, I think, to relate to it in a lot of ways, but he did.
I actually did not come here through hip hop.
Oh, okay.
Just be clear.
Right. Oh, yeah, more personal.
Well, yeah, I mean.
But
you know,
in some ways, you gotta say that that's a part of it, though.
Well, you know what? We're gonna come back and talk about that because this audio is sucking. Wait, are we good now? Yeah, we're gonna play some music from Weldon Levine. So now we can't because people aren't alive. You know what? All right, keep on talking. All right. So when I say that, it's because I wasn't really a watcher of who sampled what. That never was really my thing. Mm-hmm. So I never heard of Weldon Levine. Mm-hmm. And up until 2015, I never knew who he was. Well, I mean, before that, Clef would say, "You remind me of Weldon." I had no idea. I didn't really care. I didn't go back and check to see what he said. I didn't care about all that. Mm-hmm. What attracted me was just the story of this guy who put so much out there, but no one remembers. And then he just like blew his, you know, head away. You know what I mean? And I was fascinated that the story, you said on another show, was never told. Mm-hmm. You can Google Weldon and not find anything almost. And I was like, yo, like, this dude has a crazy story, you know. And Clef was like, you do a film about it. Like, hell yeah, do a film about this. I know it'd be so hard.
It's hard.
Documentary is hard.
Yeah.
Documentary is very hard.
It's hard too when it's someone like this where you have an obligation and a responsibility while you're telling their story that can be, it can be, you know, it can almost like lead to paralysis and sometimes because you just don't know.
What do you mean by paralysis?
Well, I'm not saying you're paralyzed, but just like artistically in a sense where it's like you're making a statement about this person that you never met and about their life. And it's a lot of times I feel, at least even when I'm writing something like fiction and narrative, it's like, who am I to write this? Like,
really, even narrative?
Yeah, like even because it's always based on something else or something real and something, you know, and it's like, you know, you have a character based on, you know, it's inspired by someone, you know, and it's like, what do I really know about it, you know? Like,
you know, I went around and got blessings from people. After a certain amount of time, you realize, okay, I got told to this person or that person in order to be proud when I go talk to anybody else. So with me, it definitely was, I had to talk to Weldon's son, Weldon, AKA Fargo. I had to talk to Marjorie Moon, I had to speak to, and his family. I had to talk to his sisters, Linda and Lois, see what's up with that. Did we just go to sleep? What kind of live is that? Is it dead? Sleep is it not live. Charging?
Is it charging? Yeah.
All right. Oh, whatever. Anyhow, but yeah, I had to really sit down and meet me, and they grilled me. And, well, who are you? And why are you doing this? I mean, why are you doing this? Is a very big question, but not like in a friendly way. Like, yeah. why are you doing this? Like, who?
What do you think? Yeah. What do you think you're gonna get from this?
Yeah. What are you trying to do here?
Yeah.
Someone tried this before. Cause someone did try to do I don't know how to say it. But the family tells me that someone tried to do a documentary about Walden before. Nothing happened. That made everybody mad.
Right.
So here I am, another person.
Yeah.
Some folks even think that I am that same person. And, you know, so that kind of is like a...
Yeah.
I'm going to lie.
Muddies the waters.
Right. So someone did do a project. You can plug it up.
Right.
About Walden. But I don't think it really came out until recently. They took what was a trailer and made it into a webisode. But it focused more so on the hip hop aspect.
On the sampling.
So yeah. So you're interviewing Entombé, Roy Ayers,
right?
About Walden doing hip hop, and it's like, dude, like that's Roy. That's what you're gonna do with this?
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, that's the angle, that's the story you want to tell, and that's actually kind of dope, right? But it's like, yo, I hope there's some outtakes where you talk about just like the funk and what.
But also, should we play a song and then I'll put this on? Right.
I gotta turn up IG Live.
Oh, I don't know.
Let's play a song.
Yeah.
All right, IG Live. Hey, just come right back. We finna play a song and it's all right. Peace.
Oh, that's been on my face this whole time. I didn't realize.
Yeah, it can't be one.
Because we gotta get an extension cord or something.
You can do Nina. Let's do some Nina. Oh, I'm still live. It's still live. Oh, it's still live. Okay, but hold on. Yeah, 40, yeah. All right, I don't know. Plug it over. Hold on, y'all. Hold on. Show must be. Here we are. All right.
Of all the evil that will have to end. Just to stay alive.
All right, hip cats. That was we're back, Mike. Yeah. So that was Nina Simone Revolution, written by Weldon. And this film, it opens up a bigger thing, man. Like this, the composers and producers and like, you know, like, okay, Phil Spector. All right. Mm. Who you got? Who else? One of the producer or arranger?
What's his name?
Take an easy one. I know. Quincy Jones.
Yeah, sure. Quincy Jones.
What's the guy?
What's his name? Work with the Supremes. What's his name? Or whatever. Barry Gordy. I don't know. Like,
No good. And these are the people, you know, like nowadays, of course, it's not that important. But yo, there's like ASCAP, you know, AS composers, blah, blah, right? Mm-hmm. But the art is dying and the history is dying, and you know, it's these men, I would hope women, it's like they'll never get their just due, right? And they'll never, like, in this generation, we can't really understand what a composer was or what a arranger, why you need a arranger and a composer,
right?
And so the stories will never be told, and right. And we just think, oh yeah, that's Smokey, you know, or that's so and so. And forget the band. The band definitely not gonna find out the band, but definitely the composer, the writer. It's a sad story. To me, it's sad. And then, you know, I'm glad that Weldon at least found through hip hop a way to stay alive with it, a way to pimp it, exploit it. You know, because who knows? That may have bought him a good 5-10 years of life, a little spark. Like, I looked at the Umi Says video the other day. You know, he's in it, you know, for a little second.
Yeah.
Shout out to Yasiin Bey, you know, who we can expect to be interviewing for the documentary, which is dope.
Right,
he's
yeah.
in town August, so, you know, I may call you. We
have
to,
right.
to quit the job.
Hell yeah.
On
yeah,
a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm there.
Yeah, very excited to... I did agree. I was like, yeah, if I can meet with him first and just vibe out, you know, it's like, that's not happening. But I did tell him that we could go to wherever he's at.
Yeah.
If he's somewhere for, you know, a good amount of days. Ta-da.
Also, you've been emailing with him personally or with his?
It's no comment.
Okay.
But it's, you know, no comment on that. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. But,
You shouldn't give out his email address, though.
No, I should not do that either. Yeah, I've been emailing the song at the Yahoo. Are you doing the Yahoo?
Yeah.
But so we may have to do that. We're not going to North Carolina anymore. That just seemed like it. I mean, it was a good thing, but I was thinking road trip, you thinking flight. I'm like, yeah, okay, we got it. Yeah.
Right.
So we're going to, the first person is going to be Ayaba Bey, who was a contributor and possibly, you know, a special friend. I'm not really too sure right now. And Carl Moltzby, an A&R and producer at RCA. It's much better, right? Carl Moltzby, A&R producer at RCA during Wilderness Time. I think we'll bring him up next month.
Mm.
So, yeah, man. We won't have to bring the lights and, you know. So
just bring him up here.
I'm excited. So we got money. We got a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. A little bit of money.
Yeah.
So far.
Money's huge. Money, I always say, like, you can't separate filmmaking from money, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
Because even if you do the film for nothing, to get it out there, you need money, you know?
A big part of the budget that I have created is marketing, publicity.
That's smart.
A very big part. Editing is definitely a big part. So let's talk about stuff, right?
Sure.
I am Morgan. I mean, I'm sorry, I called him Morgan. You said you did not see it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Why not? What are you kind of a commie?
No, I'm not a commie. But, I work so much like that. I just never have time to see anything that I want to see.
I saw it. I mean, you have to, I mean, not you, but one has to see that because that's what...
Yeah.
In our arenas, now we're jazz documentarians, you know what I'm saying? our arena, that is what's popping right now.
Right.
You are aware of the film, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's been getting really well reviewed. Seems right. Like, yeah.
So, what have you heard about it?
I don't know. I just heard that it revolves around his relationship with his wife, or
yes,
yeah, and his death.
Right, she killed him.
Yeah,
I think that's Sloan, right?
Yeah,
I have a great flyer. Always back to Weldon. I have a great flyer of a Weldon show with his 17-piece band. That's Slug Saloon, with Steve Grossman in there and Billy Cobham.
What was the name of the venue?
Slugs.
Slug Saloon.
Slug Saloon.
And that's where Lee Morgan died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in where?
Murdered.
New York or?
The LES, baby.
It was LES.
It's like a bakery now. Hold it live for a second, please.
Yeah.
It's like a bakery now.
I did something.
Did you turn it off?
Yeah.
Did you?
I think I hit the button on the side. It's too much gadgety.
Gadgety?
Gadgetry.
I'm not sure if anyone. Are we still live, y'all? Oh no, it's still live. Just don't do it. I saw it. It's a great documentary.
Mm.
But wait. Ah.
This is pointed at you too. That was like the least subtle. Like what?
Yo. Now you know how to use the gadgets? No. But yeah. I just started sweating. Wait, it's like when I saw...
So you didn't like it then? Or you did like it?
Well, all right. Boom. I think that it was a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta see it again.
Are you somebody that has to see movies many times to like...
I saw a Tupac movie twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got one more. It's out of theaters now, but I saw it twice. Yeah, I mean, I saw it, I was home, I rented it on Amazon, shout out to Amazon, shout out to, you know, whatever they're doing out there, and, you know, you're home, so you don't have the...
You get, what, the Lee Morgan one?
Yeah.
You can rent it now?
Yeah, it's out.
Oh, okay.
It's on Netflix now.
Oh, okay, then I'll watch it, yeah.
Oh, now you're watching it. Oh,
well,
yeah, I thought it's not in the theaters, right?
Yeah,
right.
I don't have time to get to
the theaters. They're doing the European run right now. Why is my face... Oh, this is what he do? So...
Sorry.
Mike has the Facebook Live, but he doesn't have my face on the Facebook Live.
Try it.
They don't know you, Mike.
Is about
it's people. There's people there.
Fall off.
That's me. No, he did save us, though. Oh, sorry. I was doing what you did to me. That's fine. Look, this is the beach.
Oh, go to the farm, Mike. Go to this one.
Alright, this is too much. Alright, so word.
Sit down on the stool.
You just tell me what to do. Come on, man. Right. So I called them Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
They set it up with audio tape of his wife, which was the narration for the most part. Which was like, okay, good. I'm glad we're looking at things in the right direction.
Narrated the film?
Well, I can't really speak for the film, but a lot of the film was her speaking. Because it was a gentleman interviewed her before she died.
Oh, okay.
And then I guess they recovered the tapes.
Okay.
And so that was that.
Yeah.
A lot of use of a lot of archive footage of... New York City, which is New York City, a lot of like just the nightlife in New York City. He spoke. He's gonna be on me. All right, cool.
Who's this supposed?
He had a lot of snow. What are you doing? Shout out to Casper. I forget Casper's last name, but I'm really happy, man. And, you know, I was very inspired watching it, as I was inspired watching the Raoul Peck film, I Am Not Your Negro. I was inspired watching the Black Panther. Oh, is that cool? The Black Panther documentary. Because with me, it's hard to tell sometimes watching what I do, but I kind of like things to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Visually, or films, you mean?
The story that I tell, gotta be a certain, visually, like the certain things that I'm not a perfectionist, but there's a certain thing I'm like, nah, it needs to be better. So watching these films, where it's a great films, and were critically acclaimed, I'm like, oh, that's all y'all want? Like, you just, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it is?
I mean, that's...
No bells and whistles?
Right.
You know, that's okay.
But there is, yeah, there is certain, you know, something inherent in filmmaking where at some point you got to pick something and stay with it, and it's got to be like somewhat simple, you know, to work for people, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, I just mean like sometimes you come to a film with a lot of ideas, a lot of big things that you want to address in it, but then at some point it's got to get boiled down to the essence, you know, like, and then sometimes that can seem, I didn't see any of those other films.
You should, you got to see all of them. You got to see all of them.
Right, yeah, they're on the list.
That sounds horrible. Tell them there is a real list.
There is.
Okay, you're working on Bull, so you can't be.
Yeah, I work in film. I'm on film sets.
Wow, you
all week long.
You sound so. what do you call that word? Conceited. I'm not conceited, but that sounds very good. I like that talk, though. That's that big talk. And you don't mean to talk. I know you don't mean that.
I mean, no. I mean, I was talking about this with a friend yesterday. When I moved to New York, all I wanted to do was be on a film set, work in a film, because I knew nothing about them. And then now, like almost 15 years later, that's all I know. Basically, like, I've gotten that wish fulfilled. So to me, it's not a big deal on any level. It's like, it's what I do 50 to 60 to 70 hours a week.
My DP gets more work than yours.
Yeah, but not shooting
that's
stuff.
DP, right? That's
yeah,
DP.
Not DP.
But the lighting, you know.
Yeah.
So how am I doing, Mike?
Directing-wise?
Yeah, directing-wise. Not producer-wise.
Right.
I'm not a producer, but you got to
produce. I think you're producing well, though. I think you're doing a good job.
Oh, so okay, so wait a minute.
But
I'm not directing well.
No. That's not what I'm saying.
It's what we're here for. We have 20 minutes.
All right. Well, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I think you fundamentally understand that it's about relationships and that there is a relationship between the director and whoever's in the front of the camera, whether they're an actor or a documentary subject or, you know, an interview subject. And there needs to be a trust there for you to try to get anything out of what you're there to do, try to get any truth out of it. And I think you understand that. And I think that as a guiding principle is the most important thing, you know, and you have that, you know.
Well, there's a but.
Well, I mean, you're asking for a critique, so, you know, I think, you know, I mean, it's not even real critique. You were asking about the Sylvia St. James interview. I didn't watch the whole interview. I was just looking at the compositions. And I thought, you know, so I would have done things a little differently there with the composing. Yeah, and that's more a shooting thing anyways.
I don't think I shot that.
Oh, you did?
I guess I have people with me.
Yeah. And I think, and before you talked about wanting to experiment, make mistakes, and, you know, wanting to do things. No. But I mean, I think that's a good impulse. Yeah. But it's also, there's this hard truth about filmmaking that whatever's in the can is in the can, and that's what you got. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so it's hard because you do want to stay spontaneous, you want to stay open to the moments, you want to take risks, but you also have to make something that people can look at, you know, and watch and stuff. So there is
So
that's a balance. But that takes, I mean,
really? So we won't go too far into that on air because we don't want to be like, oh yeah, well the DP said, but you're like you want like captions over that portion. Like, yo, Quigley did not shoot this.
No, but I mean you look at some of my stuff, it's not a you know, like,
but directing wise, forget that part, I'm not but directing wise, and
I think you got it. Yeah, I think you're doing good, you know, as much as I know,
just,
you know,
just don't be shooting I don't have to anymore. I was out there, you know, I had to do it, so I thought
no for sure. I guess I was just saying, and it only comes with the experience, is you have to find that balance between, you know, the risk taking, the trying stuff, new stuff, and then getting something in the can that works, you know, and that's fine. And I think, you know, and it's a good thing that we're talking about DJing too, and you did engineering and sound editing as well. Editing as well. And
cutting, I cut.
And I think those are also really valuable skills too, because you're constantly, like, directing to me is also like an organizational talent, where you have to, beyond being a creative talent, you also have to organize things and manage things. And especially while you're shooting, you have to be kind of arranging the scene in your head as it's going. And I can tell you do that as well when we're shooting. When you hear things that you know are going to work, you say, okay, we can move on, we can get the next thing, you know. And yeah, that's important as well. And I think also too, probably the biggest thing is you're willing to do the work, and that's why I'm interested in staying in this project. That's another thing too, is willing to do the work, you know, because it's a lot of work. It's like, or it's not even, it's just never not work. Like, right. you're working, I know you're working on this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like in your head. Like, even when you're not physically doing something, you're thinking about it. Like,
yeah. Especially this month, we're raising funds, definitely. Right. This month, I do plan to be on many radio shows and podcasts, and hopefully you'll be able to run out there with me, because they're pretty good though so far. You know, if I can, you know, we had a night where we raised, do we say how much we raised that night?
Sure, I think that's a good idea.
Oh, okay.
Because it gets people.
So from last week, I had a very, very, very private fundraising jump off. I invited you the same day, I think, probably you were elsewhere anyhow. It was at someone's home, you know, one of those things, and I talked about it, and from that evening we
was
raised,
it like black tie?
No, it was just wine.
$2,000 plates.
The proverbial wine and cheese was in effect. I used actually, I had a birthday party. You didn't go to my birthday party. You had a birthday party. You're out of town, though. You're always out of town on the party. Anyway, that's interesting. Those are my groupies you hear. But no, so I got a lot of wine for my birthday party. That was the admin free, bring wine. So I had a lot of that wine. A lot of Malbec. I don't drink Malbec. Thank you for bringing me to Malbec. Anyhow, cheese, non-vegan cheese, so I didn't eat it. And I showed them a teaser, not the one that's currently there, but I showed them a teaser. People liked it, like, okay, you know, people really, really wanted to see more. Really like, well, what happened? And people had actually pretty good questions about what they saw. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, DJ Spinner, who said that he was offered lessons by Weldon
to play the keys.
Right. Someone said, oh, that one guy, that was sad. And I'm like, oh, you get it. Like, I'm going to totally make you cry. Because my thing, if you're not crying or whatever, then I'm not doing a good job with whatever I do. Ask anyone I ever dated, you know. But, like, pretty much people really were into that little teaser. And I said, oh, it's not even, I did that upstairs while y'all was down here eating cheese. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I added on to it. And I validated by people who know, you know, what's good, what's not good. I mean, obviously, technically, it's not sound in certain ways, and that's not hiding that. It's like, yo, I need money so I can fix these things, or so these things won't happen again. Mm-hmm. Give me money. But so far, the story is whatever. So, showed Love Seat. It's always about Love Seat. And the checks came in, and from that night, got $4,000.
Wow.
The bad thing, I set up Indiegogo as a little soft launch before we go to the public, and it was on my little pad, whatever. The people there were a certain demographic, which I'm learning about this, and they were like, what is this? I have a checkbook, you know, where did I make the checkout to? All right, digging for Naveen Film LLC, please. So we have about 3,000 that did not get to Indiegogo because people just
weren't. Oh, I see.
So okay. Just that particular crowd. So the crowd was, without going too deep into the demographic, it was, people were definitely 50s.
Were any of 50s. Them familiar with him? Or?
No. One person was familiar with Q-Tip from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Q-Tip, who Walden taught the keys and all that type of good stuff. And Q-Tip caught a flood in his basement and lost records. And Walden was right there at the right time to teach him how to do things. And I mean, you know, and it's like, yo, if there was no Weldon, would there have been a lot of the stuff? I'm not going to say a lot of the sacred names, but, like, you know, we don't know what would happen if they just, they know, y'all, they know that we're doing this in here, but, you know. Anyhow, would if like Q-Tip had to keep on sampling, what would have happened in hip hop, you know? So yeah, another person that was familiar with Napoleon, she played with Napoleon before, she plays the oboe. But nah, no one knew Walden. They just like, they don't know me like that. Yeah. But they just like the story, like, you know, I know, I tell a good ass story. Mm-hmm. And I know that that the teaser is pretty good as far as telling where we're going with it. And I wanted people to see, okay, well, we've been doing things. I think with crowdfunding, it's important. People need to know that they're giving money to something that's going to actually happen. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, and two ways to show that is to actually have something to show for, but also to have money to show for. So I don't want to go out there with zero. I want to go out there with at least, you know, 10% of it.
Done.
Yeah. So, and I'm very confident in getting that 35, which is just a drop in the bucket in regards to what we need. And I say need, I just so we can do it the right way.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I think this is, in terms of directing too, this is a huge part of it, because you know, you see it in your head, but in pre-production, you have to impart that vision to other people, you know, like, and especially people that are going to be supporting it with money. And also just the idea that they have to be confident you're going to finish the film, which to you is like, no question that you're going to finish this.
Right.
But to others, like, they don't know you from anybody,
right,
and they might be like, eh. So it's like, beyond displaying that, imparting your vision, and you got to do it through words. I mean, you have a trailer, you have a teaser, that helps a lot.
I need a pitch video, though.
Yeah. But it's like, before that, beyond that, you also have to appear confident and appear, you know, like, that you're capable to finish this, you know? Which is...
Which after seeing I Am, I called Nam Morgan, I'm very confident that I can finish this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very confident. And
why? Because you think it just feels like if they did that, I can do.
No.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? What's wrong with this guy? No.
I'm trying to understand how you feel about this film.
The film was dope.
Uh-huh.
The film was necessary. Yeah, Wayne Shorter in there. Come on, Wayne Shorter, right?
Yeah, he would make a good story, too. I think I was listening to...
Why are you saying these things? Yo, I mean, answer your question first. I don't want any confusion.
Yeah.
I'm inspired because, one, it's the genre. And
right.
Before then, I hadn't... I mean, you know, they had, like, the Charlie Parker and Miles Davis, but, you know, but they opened up for it to be marketable to talk about a not well known, not a household
right,
name,
yeah,
jazz person. That's very motivational. And they didn't have a lot of interviews,
mm-hmm,
in it. So that was motivational, because I said, okay, well, I don't need to have, I mean, I need who I need to tell my story, but I don't need to have a certain amount for it to be good or for folks to like it.
Gotcha.
I saw how a lot of the reviews that I read, it's really about the actual story and Wayne Shorter's performance in the story.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, people are like, I like seeing Wayne Shorter that way, you know. So I'm like, okay, well, if I have, you know, a Yasiin Bey, or if I have, you know, a Lenny White, whatever, these are part of the things that people are going to review my thing and say, oh, yeah, Lenny White, he's talking.
Right.
You know, you've seen him before, or hey, they got this. You know, so it's kind of like having a hip-hop record. You know, you got good songs, but you have banging features.
Right.
Which is, you know,
right,
name of the game for a new artist sometimes. You
sure,
know?
Sure, sure.
So yeah, so that's why.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of use of, like I said earlier, stock photos. The good thing is that we have from the edification of Walden Ravine, thanks to Carlos Davis, there's old photos of, like, say, not photos, but a video of, they playing Ludacris out there? Mm-hmm. They have videos of Weldon.
So disrespectful.
Of Weldon at the track, and then we're at the track.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's dope. Yeah. Yeah, that's
go back to the track.
Yeah, we should go back there. Track. Yeah.
You want to shoot again?
Sure.
Let's shoot again.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the composition is non-Jesus. we have 5 minutes. So I want all to go to... start with an Instagram page. Like, if you can go to Waldenervine Film on Instagram or waldenervine.com, go there and get acclimated. I'm Torres de Costa. Search Walden. Don't search too much. I don't want you to know too much about. Well, you didn't find nothing. And that's dope. I want to write a book about this, but this is so much responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
When someone's family is involved. I think I'm pretty much done with documentary for a while after the Yusuf Hawkins thing. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Have to answer. You know, when you do art, having to answer to somebody else is like, the Tupac film is like,
Right.
I
want
to do a film about Tupac. Why?
I don't see the attraction of doing that, really. Like, just of doing a film about something like a narrative film about somebody, a real person. Like, I don't think I would ever try to do that. Yeah.
Well, hopefully I die after you, because I would want you to write.
Oh, you're in it.
I don't think, I'm planning on doing some pretty kooky things. But yeah, I mean, I'll show you.
Like, did you ever see the Bob Dylan film that Todd Haynes, I think that's his name?
No.
That was interesting to me because they had a bunch of different actors play Bob Dylan in different stages of his life, you know? Like
Moonlight had...
Yeah, but this was like a crazy amount. It was like, I forget what it was. It was like 7 or 8 people, you know? And to me, that's, as a filmmaker, that's a little more interesting. But there's also like a real, like, it's kind of crazy to say, oh, I'm going to creatively interpret this person's life. It's not going to really correspond to fact. It's going to be more my, you know, how I feel that their life was, which is a lot of people, I don't think. Like, if you had done a Tupac movie like that, I don't think people would have liked that. Or,
but aren't we, we're, like, say Gandhi is the first movie that I remember.
Yeah.
You saw Gandhi. Mm-hmm. You also saw Gandhi. That right. was, I mean, it may have been a pretty, it may have been a bad movie, you know, if you were a Gandhi historian. But aren't we glad that the Gandhi movie was out there? Like, I think there's some figure, or Malcolm X.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which was rife with, I think rife with the word, with things that were just incorrect, mm-hmm. like made up characters. Like, that's what no one really questions.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying for me, it's not. It's not for me.
Right now, I'm talking to like YouTube comments in my head.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you. But yeah, I I don't comment on YouTube, so whenever I get a chance to talk to people about it,
you just do them. Cause it's
very disheartening to hear and read a lot of the commentary about that film. It's like, damn, like, give me a break. Like, I know how it is to ask someone who was there for participation, and they say no.
Mm-hmm.
What do? I just stop doing it? No, I got to do this, you know.
Yeah.
So, with the Pac thing, I know they said they reached out to Jada Pinkett. She said it didn't, and it's like she's sitting on it now. She's writing a book about it. It's like, really, you know. So it's as a documentarian, it's like, damn. Like, I know that X amount of people said no, and they see it. If they see it, I'm like, oh, what about me? I wouldn't know. What about they didn't know about this? Like, motherfucker, I called you.
Right.
You said yes, and you said no, and you said no. So it's kind of like. It kind of depressed me a little bit, because I was like, yo, like, I know I have a shitstorm ahead of me,
mm-hmm.
you know, people who didn't really, who marginally knew Weldon, like, who are you? And I'm like, I know enough to say, who are you? You know, what, you know, where were you in this aspect of his life? You
well, he had a lot of people in his life, though. He had a lot of, right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
How so? You know, as much as you can get into Weldon's life. You know, I know he's very, very controlling in regards to that, but you know, so it's very daunting. You know, just getting ready for that, because I still feel like I have to prove something to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be a good story, though. And we're leaving out some of the dirty stuff. Not that the dirty stuff. I'm just leaving out. You know, we're not gonna. We're going to respect family, and, you know, we're going to respect Weldon's privacy, but we're going to give him the film that he deserved, and I think he's going to like it. Oh, well, you know, he's not going to. I don't know how to think that, but, you know, I think he would like it.
Right.
I think Weldon has been alive a lot in my head, so as it comes out like that.
Right.
Yeah. So, I think we about to be out. Thank you, Mike. All right, so... Tell me a story. We'll be back Sunday. He won't be here.
Nope.
think we're gonna have either Toxic Digital, maybe we'll have Angelica Beaner. All right.
How many are you gonna do? Four? Four of these or three or four?
We're gonna do four. Okay. We're gonna do four. And it might just be the world, the Digger for World Event show. I ain't gonna hold you up. Like, depending on, you know.
That'd be interesting.
Right? All right. We're out.